This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Ephesians. Please open your Bibles to the book of Ephesians chapter 6 as we join Pastor Sandy for the conclusion of his message entitled, A Parent's Avoidances.
The fourth way to needlessly needle a child is to play favorites. In one sense, if a child ever senses that a parent loves another sibling more than him or her, it can produce deep-seated resentment in that child. A resentment that one day may erupt in an all-out rebellion. The classic case of this is Joseph. You remember Jacob's favorite? Jacob gave his son Joseph a psychedelic leather jacket, that coat of many colors. He favored him over the other sons. But his brothers were jealous of the special treatment. Remember, it was Jacob's fault. But guess who they took out their frustrations on? On Joseph. They feigned his death. They sold him into slavery. Joseph was a victim of his father's favoritism. I have three sons and one daughter, and for some reason, my wife has always thought that I was tougher on my grimy, sweaty, gritty, gnarly, nappy, roughneck little boys than I was on my sweet, precious, adorable, can-do-no-wrong princess. I never saw what she was talking about, but to humor Kathy, I tried to guard against any kind of fatherly favoritism. Seriously, you may have a child whose interests and personality draw you to them, but work hard to make sure that you don't favor them over your other kids. The fifth way to provoke a child is to force him or her to be something they're not. While coaching Little League, I saw this all the time. A dogging dad trying to live out his failed ambitions through his kids. It's so sad. Hey, realize, children don't enter the world a blank slate. Their genetic makeup predetermines a host of traits and talents and tendencies. Oh, parents quickly realize the influence of heredity when their child makes the honor roll. Oh yeah, it's in the genes. But we blame their environment when the same child has to stay after school for detention. Heredity is the reason that two children born into the same family, vulnerable to the same environment, trained by the same parents, subject to the same rules, can turn out so differently. Have you noticed this? Children are like snowflakes. No two kids are the same. And thus, no single parenting style works for every child. Cookie-cutter approaches seldom work when it comes to parenting. Proverbs 22, verse 6 is the most often quoted verse in the Bible on child-rearing, but it is also the most misunderstood. Solomon said, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." But when we read that verse, we often emphasize the word way. Train up a child in the way he should go. Thus, we assume that there must be a single way to parent. There must be one way that's best. Usually, it's my way. But in the Hebrew language, the verse emphasizes the word he. Train up a child in the way he should go. Commentator Matthew Henry offers this translation of Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child according to his capabilities. In short, tailor your training to the individual child. Adapt what you're doing to the child's interests and abilities and disposition and limitations. A wise parent discovers the talents and interests that God has hardwired into that child's heart. Then he or she encourages them in that direction. If your child is an artist, don't try to force her into being an athlete. If he's a musician, don't expect him to become a mechanic. Don't try to rewire your child. You might just blow a fuse. The sixth way to provoke a child is to set expectations that are too high. I'm convinced that today's world expects far too much from kids at a far too early age. Did you know that today there are triathlons for seven-year-olds? There are summer camps that teach kids about stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Kids no longer have time to just be kids. Sometimes parents will expect a three-year-old to have the same attention span as an older sibling. Or they demand a slower developing son to bring home the same high grades as his studious sister. Children burdened down with impossible expectations end up burning out and often giving up trying to please their parents. Jesus' words to the legalistic Pharisees also applies to pushy parents. Matthew 23, verse 4, "For they bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders." Do that to your children and you'll regret it. Hey, maybe your child doesn't want to be a doctor. Maybe your child would be happy being a carpenter. Jesus was a carpenter. It was good enough for God's son. Why not yours? Too much pushing from a parent can harden a child's heart. Seventh way to frustrate your child is to have no or low expectations. Your expectations can be too high, but they can also be too low or even non-existent. Hey, you'll find a few kids are self-motivated, but most kids need some form of external motivation. They need gentle nudges at times. Hey, when faced with obstacles, it's the human tendency to opt for a path of least resistance. Too often our kids, especially, are quick to settle for less than their best. Children have to be taught that some obstacles shouldn't be bypassed. There's some mountains that need to be climbed. At times, a parent needs to keep their kid going. A parent needs to know when to prod their kids. When Carol saw that her daughter's feet turned inward, that her toes pointed toward each other, she decided to do whatever it took to help her little girl. For 4 years, her daughter wore corrective shoes. By age 6, she was walking normally, but Carol wasn't satisfied. She wanted her daughter to participate in an activity that would force her to use her feet and legs and stretch their range of motion. The little girl chose ice skating. And for 15 years, Carol carted her daughter to and from the rink. That's why when Christy Yamaguchi climbed to the platform to receive her gold medal in figure skating at the 92 Winter Olympics, she knew that her success could be traced back to her mom, Carol Yamaguchi. Carol was a mom who dreamed for her little girl. See, all kids have dreams, but they've yet to learn that those dreams come true through hard work and determination. And it's a parent's job to teach their sons and daughters the value of persistence and patience and preparation to keep the prize in front of their kids. Well, the eighth way to pester or hinder a child is to be overly critical. You know, sometimes we parents lose perspective. Have you ever caught yourself, you're focused on the one C and you've ignored the five A's? It's happened to me. We see the cup as half empty rather than half full. Parents, do your kids see you as impossible to please? If so, you're provoking them to wrath. Understand, a child craves their parents' approval. They thirst for it emotionally, like they need water. And if a child doesn't get it from their parents, they'll get it elsewhere. She'll turn to a boyfriend, or he'll turn to a peer group. Kids need their parents to be cheerleaders, not critics. Well, the ninth way to provoke your kids is by neglect. Parents, never forget that kids spell love T-I-M-E. They do. Child psychologist Kevin Lehman once wrote, "I heard parents talk about quality time, but in all my years of private practice, I've never heard a child mention the term. All a child knows is that he wants your time and attention, whether it's to watch him do somersaults and cartwheels or to take him for a Big Mac." Lehman concludes, "In trying to find time for your children, don't worry too much about how much quality is in it. Give them all the time you can, and the quality will take care of itself." Parents, you have the rest of your life to pursue your career ambitions, but you only have a few short years to spend time with your kids. Whatever you do, whatever mistakes you make, don't neglect to spend time with your children. You provoke your kids if they never see you. You know, it's sad, but some parents act like their kids come with a pause button. That you can just push pause on your child's development while you go off to do your own thing or to grow up. They're under the illusion that the opportunities will still be there when they get ready. Wow, are these naive parents in for a rude awakening? Parents, by the time you're ready, your child may no longer care. I love this quote by author Wade Horn. He says, "My father was a great dad. I didn't always think so, of course. When I was growing up, I mostly thought of him as an overbearing, autocratic stick-in-the-mud whose main mission in life was to make mine miserable. But I have since come to realize he had one great quality. He was there. Someone once said 90% of life is just showing up. My dad showed up. I always said if my kids turned out bad, it was going to be because they spent too much time with me." I believe a father with faults is still better than a father who's absent. Hey, just being there goes a long, long way. You know, the fact that I was part of my daughter's life and I was there to answer the door when that boy came over to pick her up, that alone kept certain types of boys away. If I was home, wild parties had a harder time breaking out in my house. Certainly, my kids were able to sneak off and do whatever they wanted behind my back, but that was the point. They had to sneak off. They had to do it behind my back because my wife and I were around. You see, just being there matters more than you think, parents. And while we're on the subject of parental neglect, let me mention another form of neglect that I think is especially lethal, and that is the spiritual neglect of our children. I know parents who have their kids in sports and music and art. They're in all kinds of extracurricular activities, but they leave out church. Parents who neglect their child's spiritual training are making a crucial mistake. Hey, as long as my kids lived under my roof and were bankrolled by me, they went to church on Sundays. I know at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain, we do our best to make church fun for our kids and our middle schoolers. And this is why it bothers me whenever I hear a parent say, "Well, my kids didn't want to come to church this morning, so I just left them at home." What if they said that on Monday morning about going to school? Hey, you would make them go because they need it, and then you would require them to like it. And this is the attitude we need toward our kids' spiritual training. Hey, if your kids come to church, they'll have a good time. But they may need their parents' insistence on getting here. Hey, with four kids, we did it all. Soccer, baseball, football, cheerleading, basketball, dance, but I got it written down. Softball, roller hockey, you name it, our family did it. And we saw great value in our kids' participation to a point. But we also realized that you can invest thousands of hours sharpening your kids' batting skills and making sure he can dribble a soccer ball, and that she can do a back handspring. And yet when they reach adulthood, their athletic skills won't be nearly as important as the strength of their faith and their knowledge of God. It's crucial, with everything else you do with your kids, bring them to church. Together as a family, grow in Christ, learn God's Word, apply it to your life. Make your children's spiritual training a priority for them and for you. And then the 10th way to frustrate your kids is the failure to discipline. Hey, if you let your kids walk all over you, or just brush you off, or ignore your rules, if you cave in to their manipulations and their threats, you're provoking them to wrath. You're needlessly provoking them. You know, it's been said, kids will forgive you for your mistakes, but your weaknesses will send them elsewhere for strength. And boy, have I seen that come true over and over again. I'll never forget the night I put my kids to bed, and Nick was 3 years old at the time. And I had just gotten comfortable in my recliner when all of a sudden, here comes Nick parading through the room, just sashaying through the room like he owned the place. I said, "Son, I put you to bed. What in the world are you doing up?" And I'll never forget it. He kind of turned up his little nose at me, and with this defiant look on his face, he says to me, he says, "Dad, mind your own business." And I proceeded to show that young man exactly what my business was. Hey, as much as we love our kids, at times a parent's place is in their kid's face. It is our business to discipline our kids. Children respect their parents only if you calmly but firmly stand up to them. If you cave into a child's demands because you're afraid of a fight or a little friction in the family, you've made a huge mistake. It's a parent's business to make their kids mind. Though they might never admit it, I believe kids desire a parent's discipline. Boundaries provide a child a sense of security. It lets them know that someone in their life cares. Never forget the high priest Eli. 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 13 tells us that he was judged by God because, and I quote, his sons made themselves vile and he did not restrain them. Perhaps he thought if he came down too hard on them, he'd lose them. The opposite occurred. Because he didn't restrain them, he lost them. Eli allowed his son's rebellion to go unchecked, and God judged both him and his sons. Well, an 11th way to provoke our child to anger is to set a double standard. Kids have a sixth sense. I think they were born with it. They're born with a baloney meter. They can detect hypocrisy and duplicity a mile away. And they get seriously turned off when a parent doesn't practice what he or she preaches. Parent, if you want credibility with your kid, if you want their respect, then behave in a respectful way. Be worthy of their respect. Hey, you can tell your kids to stay off drugs until you're blue in the face, but if you abuse alcohol, they won't know what's the difference. Don't ground your kid for cheating on a test when you've got a radar detector mounted on the dashboard. If it's wrong for your daughter to sleep with her boyfriend, then it's wrong for her single mom to do the same. Don't set a double standard. If you want your kids to listen to what you have to say, nothing will impress them more than your own humility and sincerity and genuineness. Hey, don't expect your kids to embrace values to which you only pay lip service. Here's a poem entitled The Better Way. It was written by a man named Edgar Guest, but it could have been written by your child. I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather one should walk with me than merely show the way. The eye's a better pupil and more willing than the ear. Fine counsel is confusing, but example's always clear. And the best of all the preachers are the men who live their creeds, for to see the good in action is what everybody needs. I can soon learn how to do it if you'll let me see it done. I can watch your hands in action, but your tongue too fast may run. And the lectures you deliver may be very wise and true, but I'd rather get my lesson by observing what you do. For I may misunderstand you and the good advice you give, but there's no misunderstanding how you act and how you live. And finally, the 12th way for a parent to provoke their child to anger is to be overprotective. See, I believe the job and the goal of a parent is to work themselves out of a job. You know, a parent can expect their child to need them at 7 years old, even at 17 years old. But if that child's still dependent on their parent at 27 years old, something went wrong. When my fourth child was born, I had the privilege to cut the umbilical cord. They didn't let me do this with the first three, but with the fourth one, this was kind of in vogue. And so I remember picking up the scissors, and I snipped the prenatal connection between my child and his mother. And it was a profound moment. For in a sense, from that moment onward, my son has been on his own. Oh yeah, his parents were still around to help. But that day, I unleashed him to live his own life. It became my job to wean him away and to grow him up and to teach him to make his own decisions and solve his own problems and develop his own skills and thoughts and ambitions. And this is where a parent's faith kicks in. You see, the overprotective parent who smothers their child, who's afraid of letting their child brush up against the real world, suffers from a lack of faith. Oh, I'm aware of the dangers. I know the risks. You need to know there are also risks of holding on for too long. At some point, you got to turn loose. When my first son, Zach, turned 5, we enrolled him in kindergarten. And on the first day, I'll never forget it, Kathy dressed him up. She put a smile on her face. She took him to school, handed him over to the teacher. And then she came back home and she cried for 3 hours until it was time to pick him up again. I'll never forget that. It was the first of many, many steps in the process of letting go. And it's interesting, now we're poised. The Lord willing. Oh, the Lord willing. For our fourth and final child to graduate from college. He told me this past week that if all goes well, Mac's going to walk on December the 13th. I got that date circled on my calendar, man. December the 13th. It'll be the first time in 13 years I haven't had a college tuition payment. December 13th. Have I told you I'm looking forward to December the 13th? But boy, in between Zach's first day of school and Mac's last day of school, there's been lots and lots of letting go. Actually, I don't really like this phrase, letting go. It's not accurate. For we're not letting go, we're turning over. For every time I've let go, I've had to trust God to be where I can't be and to do what I can no longer do. Psalm 127 verse 1 is true for us all. Unless the Lord builds a house, they labor in vain who build it. You see, there are no super parents. The only super parent is God. And ultimately, we're trusting our kids to Him. We all should be like Hannah, who brought her son Samuel to the tabernacle and turned him over to the priest. That's what God wants you and me to do. God desires for us to turn our children over to Him and then to trust Him with their safety and their welfare. God gives us our kids. Then we do all we can to teach them obedience and respect, and then we give them back to Him. It is a selfless act. It is what we call parenthood. Let me close with the 127th Psalm. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. At the time this psalm was written, archery was a new invention in the science of weaponry. Prior to this, its utilization, soldiers fought hand to hand, face to face. But with the introduction of the bow and arrow, all of a sudden a soldier could now strike a target at a distance without personally encountering and engaging his opponent. And this is a father's desire and goal for his kids, to send them on ahead like arrows from his bow, to help them go where he can't travel, to accomplish more than his hands will ever reach. It's been said, every parent is a Moses. We're preparing our children for a world we will not enter ourselves. We see the promised land, but we won't enter. Years ago, a dad at the ballpark, he asked me, he said, "Don't you hope your kids turn out like you?" And I said, "You got to be kidding. If my kids only turn out as good as me, I'll be severely disappointed. I'm praying they turn out far better than me. I want my kids to sail further and higher and straighter and farther than their dad. I'm just the archer, and it's up to me to set the arrow on a course that will strike its intended target." And so let me state it a final time. A parent's purpose is to teach their children obedience and respect. And they do it with two tools: training or discipline, and admonition or encouragement. All the while, they avoid provoking their children to wrath. As we've noted before, God's power always accompanies His purpose. This morning, I suggest we end by praying for that power.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies. constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.